My name is Dave. I'll be presenting my paper with my professor Steve Grebel on Maverick, which is providing web applications with safe and flexible access to local devices. This is at the University of Washington in beautiful, sunny Seattle, Washington. So today, as we all know, consumer devices are basically everywhere, from our Kindles and our iPads and our GPS watches. These devices are more and more becoming the primary means by which we interact with computers. And this sort of device revolution, I see lots of devices in this room right now, has been so successful. And one of the reasons is because our desktop operating systems and our applications have so far provided really robust support for running just about any device you could possibly imagine. As everyone in this room knows, desktop applications and perhaps operating systems are being replaced by web applications and the cloud as a platform. And we think in this paper that this is causing a fundamental problem. And to motivate this problem, here on the left-hand side, I've given an example scenario of something that I'd like to be able to do today, but I can't. I've got one of those nifty Garmin GPS watches. When I go for a run, it records all these informations about how slow I'm going and whether I'm falling apart or not. And Garmin has a nice site where I can upload this data and share it with my friends, or perhaps share it with Steve and show him how I'm getting better. What I'd really like to be able to do is take this watch, plug it into my computer, navigate to that website in my browser, and then just have the website directly pull that data into Garmin.com. Instead, what I have to do is one of the two options on the right. In the first option, I have to install Garmin's specific device driver into the operating system that knows how to talk to the watch. Then I have to install a plugin in my browser that knows how to talk to the watch and talk to Garmin. The other option is I can go download this desktop application instead of a plugin, and this knows how to talk to the watch and then push the information up into Garmin. So what kind of went wrong in this example? Well, in option A, I had to modify my browser. In option B, I had to modify the operating system by installing a new desktop application. In either case, this required me to install a device driver into my OS and potentially buggy or even dangerous application software on my computer. And it's our view in this paper that we shouldn't have to do this. We shouldn't have to modify the browser, the operating system, to get device support. There's a better way, and this should be directly put into the browser. Now, this is a motivating example. I think we can imagine many other examples where having direct device support in the browser would make sense. Here we've listed a few. Imagine being able to scan or sync, or sorry, fax documents directly from, say, your Google Voice or Docs account. Sync your iPod with an actual cloud offering as opposed to your desktop software. Or maybe edit your photos off your USB flash stick directly in something like Photoshop Live. I'm sure the collective brains here could all think of more applications where this would be nice and this would be applicable. So this is not to say that browser vendors these days are not actually looking at this problem. In fact, they are. There exists, especially in HTML5, a number of tags that are mostly targeted towards audio and video devices. I believe that Sony Ericsson has recently implemented some video conferencing support. I don't know if it's open source yet. For a while, there was also this notion of a generic device tag. I think this quote from Mark Pilgrim at the What Working Group, though, is kind of telling about where that work is now. I haven't seen it included recently, and I'm not sure that they actually spec'd out how this would work for a generic device. Regardless, we believe that this process of adding tags is probably not very realistic for the long tail of unsupported devices that we have today, and that the approach of standardizing new devices and waiting for standards bodies and browsers to adopt these is kind of the wrong way to go. Standards bodies, as we knew, move slowly, and even today we are having trouble getting browser vendors to agree on what to actually implement in a common standard. The other option developers have are to write device-specific plugins. This, of course, is kind of scary because, as we know, the plugin security model basically gives you full access to the system. And not too surprisingly, customers we've seen are pretty reluctant to install arbitrary plugins onto their system. So what this paper is really, I think, about is asking, and we think providing one answer, to what should a web architecture look like for providing device support in the browser. And we think that any architecture that is proposed is going to have to overcome three major challenges. The first is what we call webbiness. The second is performance, and the third is security. For webbiness, what we want is to empower web developers to actually add that device support themselves. And this means requiring no modifications to the underlying browser or the operating system. And we'd like whatever code that we come up with to add this device support to be in web languages, say like JavaScript or even native client. For performance, we want to maintain fast and efficient device access support just like we have in native applications. And for security, we want to make sure that we prevent malicious web applications from getting access to our devices. As we all know, our devices contain highly sensitive information not only about, say, files, but also about our environment. If we do give access to web applications, we want to make sure that damage that a buggy application could do to our devices is somehow limited or contained. And finally, and I think this is an important part, we want to make sure that we insulate users from having to make error-prone and difficult security and trust decisions about which web applications to trust with their devices. And we'll talk a little bit about some of the policies that Maverick's come up with. So the solution we offer in this paper is the Maverick browser architecture. And it solves these problems in the following way. Maverick makes device drivers and frameworks for devices, such as, say, for frameworks such as the file system layer or the video streaming layer. These are actually written as web programs. And they are downloaded and run on demand in the browser. And this requires no host OS or browser modifications to support new devices. For performance, we rely on the fact that JavaScript is actually fast enough for most devices these days, and it's getting faster. As well, if you're really interested in performance-critical devices, we also support native clients, so you can, say, run them in C++. For security, we leverage strong browser sandboxing. We also build secure IPC channels between the various devices so we can restrict the communication and constrain it. And for this notion of how do users decide what to trust, we provide a set of flexible access control policies, and the default which allows you to offload these decisions to trusted third parties, say like Google or Microsoft. And we're going to get into the details of how that happens a little bit later in the security evaluation. So that's kind of a tease of Maverick. This is the outline where we're going to go rest in the talk. We've given an introduction and a motivation. I'd like to now talk about the Maverick browser architecture. I'll then give you a performance evaluation, a security evaluation, and I'll end with some conclusions. So just a quick caveat before we dive in here. Maverick only supports USB devices at this point. We made this choice for the following reasons. USB is a pretty simple architecture, protocol. Sorry, it's a message-oriented protocol. It's architectural neutral. It's fast. New USB 3.0 speeds are theoretically up to 5 gigabits per second. And it's ubiquitous. It's hard to find a consumer device today that doesn't support USB in some way. For the rest of the talk, when I talk about devices, I'm sort of implicitly saying USB. So just to give you a little bit of background, how does device access work in current desktop operating systems? So here I've got an example with my USB flash drive, some user-level applications, Word and Photoshop. And the question is, how do these applications access the device today? And it's pretty straightforward. It's the architecture we've had for quite a while now. You install device drivers into the kernel. Their job is to wrap very low-level commands, in this case, say SCSI, inside of USB packets to talk to the device itself and implement its protocols. We then also have frameworks, which straddle the line between the OS and the user level. And these frameworks' jobs, in this example, is to provide higher-level abstractions like a file read or a file write, and then push those down into the details of the device driver and the device itself. In general, your operating system will have many frameworks, drivers, and devices all talking together at once. And the goal of the frameworks is just basically to provide this nice API and abstraction to applications and hide all the details of what the devices are and the drivers and leave that to the operating system. I want to point out here that in this model, it's up to the host OS to deal with issues of interoperability and compatibility and resource allocation between the devices, the drivers, and the frameworks. So the question we asked is, why doesn't sort of this existing model fit very well into the browser? So the diagram that I'm giving here is basically all the architecture is the same below the browser layer that we've inserted here. And we've replaced desktop applications with web application equivalents. And what goes wrong is, first of all, to add new devices or framework support, we need to actually modify and bake in these abstractions into the browser for every new device that we want. In addition, we still have to have the user install and modify the operating system with drivers and frameworks for every device that they want to use. And it's our argument that this violates this webbiness notion that we introduced in the beginning, which is sort of for users, they like this no software installation, software as a service model, and for developers, they really like writing platform agnostic code. So how does Maverick solve this problem? Well, here's the Maverick architecture, and we think it's webby, for some vague notion of what webby is. In this architecture, we don't require any device or modification of the browser. We require no modification of the browser or the OS for the new devices. How this works is that developers write web drivers and frameworks as web applications. When an application wants to use a device, the browser runs them on demand, fetching them from the web, and runs them in isolated browser sandboxes. Maverick then establishes secure IPvC channels between the device and the various components. And the job of these channels is really twofold. The first is to provide generic channels with which developers can write their own protocols and messages to send between the various components and devices. And the second is, as you see here, we have the security policy layer. All communication is run through these IPC channels, and then we can enforce certain security policies on what to trust and compatibility issues. So here's to give you an example of how Maverick would solve our GPS problem that we motivated in the beginning of the talk. Here now I have Maverick browser running my Garmin web application, and I've plugged in my watch. Using Maverick, the Garmin website would ask to connect to the GPS watch, at which point the browser would go off, download, and run compatible web drivers and frameworks for the Garmin watch, which it would fetch from Garmin. These would start executing in the browser, at which point Maverick would go out and set up IPC channels between the various components, which it's done at this point. And then once this is all set up, the website can go say, okay, upload the data, and then the data will flow through these various components and up to the Garmin website. It's tying together the architecture that we've seen with sort of the motivating example. So we actually built this. We built it on a modified version of Chrome running on Linux, so all the development was in C and C++. The web instances up here, the drivers, the frameworks, and the applications, we support writing them in JavaScript or even native client, so you can write drivers or frameworks in C++. It's a very event-driven style. That is, these IPC channels basically support posting events and receiving events, so it's very used to what we see when you program normal web applications. And then down here is this little security policies bit, which is very flexible and allows users to define how they want to trust things and how interoperability issues should work. And in the security section, we'll dive more into how you actually set these to make reasonable choices. I just wanted to give you an example of what it's like to write code in Maverick. Here is a snippet of JavaScript code for a webcam, Logitech, I believe, webcam driver. This function basically sends a USB message to the webcam that says, please start streaming video. The things I want to point out here is that it's pretty clean code. You can create a USB control message. You can initialize event. And then the way you make it happen is you basically just post the event to Maverick, and all the routing magic takes over. This is the equivalent code written in C++ inside of native client. Really, the interesting things here are the code basically looks syntactically the same. And so it's pretty easy to port between the two and create your drivers and your frameworks. So that's kind of an architectural overview of Maverick, as well as what we built. I now want to dive into a performance evaluation of our prototype, and then we'll go on to security discussion and then some conclusions. Performance. To evaluate performance, we built a number of real drivers, frameworks, and applications. We built JavaScript and native client implementations of drivers for a Logitech webcam, a SanDisk flash drive, as well as a little USB LED device that you could light up various colors for fun. We also built JavaScript and NACL implementations of frameworks, one for a video streaming layer and one for a full FAT16 file system. We also built some device-enabled apps that use these drivers and frameworks. Photo Booth, which allowed us to replay webcam streams and save them to disk and play them back again. Squirt Linux, which was a cute idea that allowed us to put your USB flash drive in, go to a website and actually ghost byte by byte a bootable Linux installation onto your USB flash drive. And then Ambient Stocks, which is a nice app that you put your LED device in there, and then as the stock market went up and down, the device would change color. So what's performance like? Two benchmarks here I want to show. I think there's more in the paper. The first is our webcam driver benchmark. And the question we wanted to ask here was, is our web drivers in JavaScript native client able to keep up with the data rate that's being sent out by the camera? This turned out to be 250 URBs per second. A URB is basically just a USB request response packet. What we see here is that the native client implementation is indeed able to keep up with pretty low CPU overhead. The JavaScript version, on the other hand, can't quite keep up, and it has much higher CPU utilization. This turns out really to be a lot of overhead having to deal with poor support for basically binary data inside of JavaScript now. As for the second benchmark here, we had a USB flash stick. We had a FAT16 file system framework. And we had a web application that read and writes 20 kilobyte files to the flash stick over this entire pipeline. And what we measured here was the sort of throughput for create and write, as well as for file reads. Our results show that they're not as good as the native kernel implementations, but we think, you know what, actually they might be good enough for a large class of applications where you want to save files and read files. And in general, this sort of goes to our performance summary, which is that JavaScript is indeed slow-ish, but we think that it's fast enough for many interesting classes of applications and devices that you might want to use on the web. And we also think it's only getting faster. I mean, browser vendors, as we all know, are pushing to make these JavaScript interpreters faster, adding things like typed arrays, et cetera. Native client performs very close to native. This is very much an unoptimized implementation, and we think sort of from learning from user-level drivers and all that literature and microkernels that we can make this native client implementation even better and even closer to native. So our intuition overall is that most devices used by web applications aren't going to need extremely high throughput data rates, as say we saw in this webcam example. Okay, great. Finally, I want to talk about our security evaluation in Maverick. I'm sure that many of you, when you hear about exposing devices to the web, and maybe perhaps using Mavic, you have a number of gut reactions about security. The first might be that, oh my gosh, devices contain highly sensitive information. I don't want to leak these to third parties. Oh boy, poking holes in the browser sandbox, that seems kind of bad. How do I decide which web drivers or frameworks to trust? How do I make sure they're not buggy or malicious? And if I do actually run a buggy and malicious web driver framework, what happens and what can I do to protect my system? So I think these are all absolutely legitimate concerns, and they're concerns that we had. And I think they all stem from the fact that exposing devices to the web is a scary idea. But we think that it's inevitable, and not only that, it's starting to happen already. So no matter what solution we come up with, we're going to have to deal with these problems at some level. So how does Maverick deal with them? Well, Maverick has three primary security mechanisms. The first are these flexible security policies that we've talked a little bit about. And their job is to intercept on all communication and running of instances to enforce which web instances can talk to each other. The second is strong browser sandboxing. We rely on the browser sandbox to isolate web instances from each other and provide some level of fault containment that you might have, say, in user-level drivers with a process. The third is this point-to-point IPC channel, and its job is to provide strong isolation in the communications between the various pieces. For the rest of this discussion, I really just want to focus on the first mechanism, these security policies, because I think it's the most interesting. And so we also talk about the others in the paper, but I think this is kind of the neat one. So by default, or the most general security policy provided by Maverick is really targeted towards power users, developers, and it's power user mode. And in this mode, a web application that would like to use a device, what it does is it actually asks for the framework URL for the device that it wants to use by name, by URL. And the framework URL then names the driver that it would like to use, and then the driver specifies the exact device that it would like to use. It's then Maverick's job to go and fetch and download and run these various components. Before running any of them, it pops up a "Are you sure?" scary dialog box to the user. The user can then whitelist these choices for future decisions. Now, we'd like to point out that while this is incredibly powerful and embraces many of sort of the web-centric notions that we have, that you can do anything that you want to and you can write your own drivers and support any device, it's also pretty dangerous if you screw it up and you don't know what you're doing. And why is this the case? Well, power user mode, I think, has a number of major problems. The first is safety, the second is interoperability, and the third is complexity. By safety, what we mean is in this mode, it's completely up to the user to decide whether these web instances are trustworthy, whether they're safe, whether they're bug-free, et cetera. As well, the interoperability decision is also up to the user. How do I know that these drivers and frameworks will actually work with my device? That's on the user. As for complexity, you can imagine that as I have more devices over time, I'm going to have to manage all these relationships, and this can be very hard to do. If I mess anything up, then potentially I could have serious problems. So to deal with all these issues, because everyone's not an expert, Maverick also provides a default user mode that we call domain providers. And with domain providers, domain provider is basically a third party, a trusted third party like Google or Free Software Foundation. And their job is to bundle interoperable drivers and frameworks for various devices. Then once a user has configured their browser with a domain provider that they'd like to use, when an application wants to use a device, it specifies both the framework type it would like to use, for example, a file system framework, as well as a domain provider like Google. It's then up to Maverick to contact the domain provider and ask them for a set of compatible drivers and frameworks for a device, downloads them, and runs them instead. So why do we like this notion of domain providers? Well, it's because we think it solves these sort of three problems that we had in power user mode. What domain providers do for safety is that they offload the security and trust decisions to well-known third parties that we already trust. These third parties are already presumably experts in getting issues like security right and writing bug-free web application code. As well, for interoperability, in this case with domain providers, users aren't even exposed to interoperability issues. They just want to use a device, and it's up to the third-party provider to make that happen for them. It's also nice from a provider's perspective because they can completely control the ecosystem for their various drivers and frameworks, define their own APIs, and define their own ecosystem for that. As for complexity, again, this complexity is completely managed by the third party. And this is sort of a similar model to what you might imagine with, say, what we do in desktop operating systems, where we offload our trust to, say, Microsoft to manage all of the internals and the gunk inside of Windows. So we think in that sense, this is a very much a similar model to what we have in the desktop operating system now applied to the browser case. For these reasons, we've made the domain provider as the default security policy mode inside of Maverick. Of course, you're free to kind of experiment and have at it and go into power user mode if you'd like to. I also just wanted to touch on what happens if buggy and malicious web instances do get run in Maverick. Maverick's main security policies, its domain provider policies, are set up and designed to prevent these things from running in the first place at all. But if that fails, the other two mechanisms, browser sandboxing and IPC channels, are designed to hopefully contain the damage that can be done at least to a single device. We want to point out that this is completely not a foolproof solution. Bad things can certainly still happen if you're running buggy or malicious drivers. And what we think, what this really means is that given you're running domain providers, Maverick really increases the risk or raises the stakes of getting web security right. If you're going to expose a device through a web application, you want to make sure that you've got web security right, because you might be at risk of having a breach actually expose the information on that device as well. But that's sort of fundamental to exposing devices to the web in general, we think. So that's an overview of security. Just want to end up with some conclusions, point out Maverick's contributions. We think we've built a novel browser architecture for web app device access. We have a working prototype in Chrome running on Linux. We ported real device drivers and frameworks to JavaScript and native client. We evaluated this prototype using a bunch of device-enabled web applications, and we provided an initial exploration of the security implications, coming up with a solution that is very similar to what we're used to in the desktop operating system today. With that, I want to say thank you, and I guess, take any questions.
Questions from the audience?
Yes. So one of the points here is that with Maverick, really, and we talk about this in the paper, the only thing you really install in the OS is basically just a generic USB relay. And so any USB device that gets plugged in and routed to Maverick goes up to the browser. And so you can on-demand fetch, you know, compatible drivers and frameworks. So you can imagine if you have an old device, you could plug it in, and then the browser could say, hey, I noticed this. I'll go off and find something that works for you. You don't have to worry about installation. So you can imagine this maybe like in a Chrome OS environment where you don't actually want to ship drivers, and you want basically an operating system that's as decoupled from installation as possible. But absolutely, you can do that. Good
question. With the domain providers, can you completely eliminate the need for user approval? It would seem to me that even with a domain provider, if I've exposed say a flash drive, I probably want the user to indicate which files are okay from that drive. I wouldn't want to give blanket access to everything. And then I worry, I think all the evidence I've seen suggests that if you have to ask the user for approval, it's not going to work because most users will approve anything.
Right. So this kind of goes down to that, how do you get, I mean, fundamentally, I think you're right. At some level, you probably need to still ask for permissions. I'm not sure that we as a community have come up with good ways of asking for permissions and making that happen. I'm not sure it's something that we really explored, but I think it's absolutely a problem that would have to be addressed. And I think would have to be addressed for any sort of device access policy that we come up with. And I'm sure some people here probably know more about the HTML5 specs and what they're doing for devices or for audio and video and how they're asking for those sorts of accesses. But it does seem that just sort of popping up, are you sure, dialog box is probably not good, certainly for my mom.
There doesn't seem to be any words strong enough you can say that will scare people away. They will still punch yes anyway.
Right. I mean, and I've certainly fallen victim to that myself. So maybe someone suggested maybe a flaming, scary picture to scare you off. But I think the community in general...
Yes.
The community in general probably needs a better way of dealing with these access policies.
Three questions, but I'll try to be quick. So the first thing is, did you try to write a driver for a keyboard?
So what's interesting about this is you can imagine doing some pretty crazy things. So you could write one for, say, your keyboard or your mouse, maybe your network card or the graphics driver. Of course, then you have sort of a bootstrapping problem and a chicken and an egg problem. We've certainly played around with it. There's no reason we couldn't do it, but...
The reason I was asking about a keyboard is because you could capture... password, right?
Yeah,
so that's one of the dangers.
For sure.
The other thing I was going to say is I think Chromebook is perfect. I imagine you must be talking to this team. You should if you're not. Patrick was here. I don't know if you got a chance to talk to him.
I didn't get a chance to talk to him. I did actually make a mental note that I would like to talk to him about it. But
okay. Partly because I run with Garmin also. I'd love to be able to use Garmin on other thing than Safari, because that's pretty much what it supports right now.
I think it's very much sort of this user-level device driver, which we all kind of got right maybe in microkernels, and then now it's sort of exposing it where the browser's the platform instead. And it's a little wonky, but I don't think it's completely out in left field.
The final thing I mention is, unfortunately, we did exactly this.
Okay.
I'm from IBM, so kind of old.
Is this the JavaX USB thing?
Well, right, but more. So I pointed to I think some of this, but there's also to support point of sale on a browser.
I see.
And you know, so and this might be an interesting area for you to look into. Also, is that as more and more of those point of sale. So basically, you know, in addition to the user, you know, consumer devices, think of you know, kind of verticals, right?
Sure.
Healthcare and so on, where people want to use the browser as the primary. This becomes very, very interesting because otherwise they have to write drivers per operating system. But the whole point of going to a browser is so that you disconnect yourself from the operating system.
Sort of
so you solve that for them.
Yeah, it's kind of moving more of the OS that's dependent on the device that you have and pushing it off in the cloud. So I'd love to talk about kind of what you guys did later offline.
We'll try that.
Thanks.
And, so I have a question as well about the security policy.
Sure.
So I there was my question. So it seems like this makes a lot of sense for, especially for the I/O type of devices, when your security problems there are relatively contained. Like if it can unplug the microphone and the video and go away. Do you think, like, how different do you think this happens? What do you think has to change to do a better job of supporting security for things like cell phones or stuff that have both compute and state in them, where you know, a virus can get into this device and then not go away when it's unplugged? Do you need, for example, more support in the device for a security policy?
So let me try to paraphrase your question. Are you saying like more intelligent devices where if something bad goes into them, you take them away from your computer and then they might have RAIN to wreak havoc sort of offline in some sense? I think that's a good question. I don't think it's one we addressed. I think my guess is that's probably maybe says more to the fact that our devices themselves need to have better security policies in general, and that this is maybe another channel for exposing that information that needs to be secured, but it seems like all the other channels that exist also presumably need to have equally good security. So maybe it's a complimentary question.
How much is USB ready for the web, I guess, is partly the question.
Yeah, that's a great question. I'm not sure I have a definitive answer on it, though. But certainly for a lot of things we looked at, I think it makes a lot of sense. And certainly for the stuff I think that people are looking at HTML5, for more complicated devices, are these devices ready for the web in general, in the cloud, is a tricky question. So it's a great idea.
Do we have any other questions? Going back into session here. No, all right. Thank you very much.
Thanks.